between the life we see and the world we dream, there are stories when they are told. Nightmares become imagination. So please.
Thomas, you aren't.
Hello to the guild. Are you brave enough to go off on your own? Welcome to the Dim Light Anxiety Podcast. I am your host, Giggles, and let me give you fair warning. I have been battling a fever for the past few days, so I may be a bit loopy. And my voice may sound a little bit different. I don't know if you guys can hear it or not, but it sounds a little bit lower, a little bit harshy to me. But this is the first day since I fell sick that my throat hasn't been screaming at me. So I decided to record. I was afraid I would have to push the published date because of it. I mean, it was bad. However, fortune looked kindly-ish on me. I'm still held up in my room with my kitties purring me to health, but I have a mild fever still, and my throat is still scratchy, all these fun things. I honestly get fevers so rarely that when I do get them, I am knocked on my ass. Oh, woe is me. My sister barely listened to me complain, so I can't imagine that you would want to hear any more on the subject. So, besides any feverish nightmares I might be having, these are not the nightmares we gathered here today to hear in hopes of being scared to laughter. After all, you guys all know from Campy 2, if I'm the only one here, why is that chair rocking scary? I want to hear them all, for nightmares are a terrible thing to waste. If you have a nightmare you want performed on my podcast, just send them to dimlightanxiety@gmail.com. I'll see what I can do to bring your nightmare to life. Today's first terror tale is written by a fantastic writer you can find on Reddit under the username RedDinoRoarRoar. You really need to check out the spelling for that one in the description because it's great, but you'd have to see it. Their story is about choices. So I wonder what choice you might make if you were faced with these options. If smart people don't go looking for trouble, especially when alone, it's a good thing these characters live on the edge. Who knows what they may find, or what will find them. Submitted for the approval of the Guild with Dim Light Anxiety, I call this story The Tales of Secluded Discoveries. Titled, Have You Ever Played Hide and Seek in the Woods? I don't know how often someone says, oh, I've lived through a creepypasta, or I've seen a monster and here's what I saw. To be honest, I have a lot of mental issues, and the story I'm going to tell has been written off as some very vivid hallucination that I had conjured up as a scared kid who got lost in the woods for a few moments. But it felt too real, yet made no sense. Now that I've warned you that this may or may not be real, let's get into the part y'all came for. It was the summer of 07, I think. I was about 9 or 10. I was a short kid who didn't have much in the way of sports prowess, except for track. Being short and skinny meant I didn't have much weighing me down when I ran, so I prided myself about it. Other than that, the only things I had going for me was my ability to take a beating and my almost photogenic memory. I was a happy child, at least until I started having panic attacks. It started around 6 when I started sleeping in my own bed after my uncle had moved out and left for California. Whenever I got either scared or stressed, I saw things. The first time it happened, I saw 3 strangers walk from my mom's room which was right next to my room. Then they walked down the stairs. None of them came back up, and we soon learned I had schizophrenia. Mostly just visual hallucinations, but sometimes I heard a small voice in certain places that called my name. After this, I met one of my good childhood friends. Her name was Mia Valentine. She was a little bit older than me by about 3 years. She was a tall, thin Asian girl who was an amazing track star. She could outrun anyone in our smallish town. She had good grades, easily one of the more popular kids at school, but what no one knew was that she also suffered from schizophrenia. Hers wasn't as bad as mine. She would just wake up once in a blue moon and remember doing something that she never did. Only once did it get bad. But that's a story for another time. Soon, I found out that Mia lived in the house behind mine. She walked through my backyard once while I was outside with my cat, praising him for killing a small raccoon who had been trying to get into my room for a while. I did this by petting him and lightly scratching under his chin. I called out to her as she walked past. "Hi, Mia," I called out. She stopped and looked my way. "Oh, hey, Sai," she called, greeting me with her warm smile. "Do you live here?" she asked. We never really met outside of the group therapy sessions.
Yeah,
I said shyly as my cat rubbed his head against my hand as if to tell me to keep petting. After a few short words, she decided to introduce me to the rest of the kids in the neighborhood. Three of them lived next door to me. They were the Rivers. The oldest of them was a big guy named Drew. He was a pretty decent football player and, unlike most jocks, was kind as they can be. He would always pick me and his youngest sister, Lily, on his team to make it fair for the other team, which usually had his other sister, Caroline, and Mia's little sister, Carly. Other than them, there were two of Drew's friends, August and Blake. They would play a few football or soccer games with us, but other than that, they would mainly hang out in Drew's house. Drew was the only one of them who would take time to play with us and was the only other kid who explored the woods around our houses. I loved those woods. I would occasionally walk out there with a toy fishing rod and a very sharp tent spike and go, quote-unquote, hunting and fishing. Drew would help me bring back whatever I caught, which was often some small fish and forage nuts. And one time, a snake. But that was an accident, and my mom wouldn't let me eat it. But after a while, I made a sort of map of the wooded area. I knew where the safe places to hide were and where the holes and pitfalls had been and marked them with spray cans and wooden stakes. After showing a couple of the parents where those spots were, my grandpa bought me a large radio set on the promise that we wouldn't go alone and each pair had at least one radio on them. You know, those ones that hunters would use to keep in touch when they were hunting dangerous games. Once we had those, our parents would let us go out there. While we were out there, we often played hide-and-go-seek. I enjoyed our time out there. One day, we persuaded our parents to let us stay out in the woods until midnight. My mom was usually up late, so she and Mia's mom volunteered to wait up for us. We decided to play late into the night, and as we divided into pairs, we decided to have older kids with younger ones. It was a little hard because Caroline and I were the same age. After a little bit of thinking, Caroline was paired up with Carly, simply because she wasn't prone to panic attacks when she got stressed or scared. Once that was decided, Mia offered to take me as she knew how to calm me down if I started to have one. And I was the only one who knew she even had them, much less knowing how to calm her. Which left Drew and the now 5-year-old Lily as the last pair. We played a game of rock, paper, scissors to decide who would be seekers. I lost, so it was me and Mia. We gave the other kids some time to hide, and as I counted over the walkie, Mia giggled, and I got tripped up on 44. I had a hard time with R sounds, and I was nervous as I had started to develop a little crush for Mia. 87, 88, 89, 90. As I neared the end of the count, my ears twitched. I noticed Mia had gotten unusually quiet. It was unlike her. If she got bored, she would usually sing in Cantonese a song her mom taught her. It was passed down from the first generation of her mom's side of the family, but it was quiet. I looked back and noticed she wasn't there. Mia? I stood where I was when I started counting. As I stood there, I heard the rustling of leaves behind me. I knew from the sound it was some kind of animal. As I stiffened, it stopped, which I knew meant it was a predator. I had started reading up on wolves, and the deer would stiffen. The wolf would stop. If the deer thought the wolf was just passing by, the deer wouldn't run. But the deer would stand there a bit longer, giving the rest of the pack time to enclose. It was then when I realized that I could hear a voice calling to me. It wasn't like the voices before. It was darker, more sinister than what I had normally heard. Immediately, I curled up in a ball and started trying to calm myself. After a few moments, I heard what sounded like tree branches cracking. I slowly turned and let out a scream of pure terror. In front of me lay Mia. Her arms broken and bent in several places. Her throat torn up by God knows what. One of her legs was gone and the other. It looked like it had been in a wood chipper. I averted my eyes, which were now full of tears. And that's when I heard it.
Sai, are you okay?
The sound jolted me up and I looked up to see Mia in perfect health, like not a hair was out of place on her head. I quickly looked around and the only thing that might have suggested I hadn't imagined the whole thing was that the ground was saturated with blood. Now, totally confused, I stared at her. Despite deciding on the spot as to act that what I saw was real, I quickly asked her, "What's my biggest fear?" This I thought was a safe question to ask, as I had many fears, but I told a lot of my friends a different fear. Mia was supposed to say heights. What she said was,
"Falling?" I deemed it an appropriate response. This also brought me to the realization that she had no idea what was going on. Quickly, I got out the radios and called for a return to base. We got nothing back. After a couple of minutes, me and Mia decided to go out and find the rest of them. Now, remember how I said I knew the woods inside and out? Well, as we were walking, I realized these weren't the woods I knew. The trees were too old and tall to be the ones I knew. Mia now looked worried, her hands clasped on mine. It was obvious now she was making sure I didn't get lost as well, but younger me foolishly thought it was simply because she was getting scared and saw me as a pillar of safety. "Wait," I said, and looking towards a large, twisted and gnarled, all the way from the roots to the branches. It was only after a second I realized what had drawn my attention. Carly was hanging from one of the branches. Mia screamed and dropped to her knees. Carly was hung up by a rope of her own hair. Her scalp and a bit of her skull were torn off and tied in some twisted version of a bow. Her eyes gouged out of her tiny skull. But as I got ready to blink, I saw a flash of movement. The shock caused me to blink, and I opened my eyes and saw Carly crying all in one piece under the tree we had found her in. Mia looked up at the sound of the sobs and rushed over to her little sister. The two of them cried for about 5 minutes as I tried to figure out what the fuck was going on. It wasn't possible Mia and I were having the same hallucination. We had attacks at the same time before, but never had a similar experience. The way Mia had screamed when she saw Carly, she had to have seen what I did. And if she had, then how was Carly okay now? What the hell is out here with us? You know how when you're younger and you think you are the smartest person in the room, and or you are the best at everything? 'Cause I sure as hell did. Mia, stay here. I'll go find the others, I exclaimed, now moving to where I saw the mystery silhouette. I don't know what 10-year-old me thought I was fitting to do about anything, but Mia, who undoubtedly spotted this problem, objected. No, Sai, we stick together. There's no telling what animals are out here. And I know you're already having attacks, and I'm starting to have them too. She had whispered the last part so I could only hear her. Her sister was still too busy sobbing to eavesdrop. So we are having the same attack then? When have we ever had a remotely similar attack before, much less seen the same thing? Something isn't right. You and Carly are safe here. I can go find Drew and the others, and we will find our way back here, I said, confident she would see the logic in this plan, but it was no use. After she got her sister to calm down, the three of us set off. Mia had consented to me leading us forward. Out of our group, I knew the most about how to stay alive in the woods. From the many books I read to all the hunting trips I took out with one of my buddies. It was the latter that was most useful now that I knew we were being followed by something. It wasn't long before I found some weird tracks heading down a long path. After some more arguments with Mia about how safe it was to go alone, after assuring her that if I saw something that I would come back immediately, she finally let me walk down the path alone. Looking back, it was one of the dumbest things I had ever done in my entire life. But soon the trees grew so close together that their branches blocked out the sun. I walked further down the path, ignoring every fiber, every instinct to run the other way. But I knew deep down that the only way all of my friends made it out of here was if I found them. Some monster was using our innocent game of hide and seek as a way to torture us. The voices were getting louder. They always got louder when I was alone. But I didn't try to block them out this time. I wanted to know if any of them sounded the same as that one from earlier. Soon I came across a large opening, like a hidden grotto of sorts. The clearing was at least a 40-foot radius around the giant and ancient tree. I again found a horrid sight. Her intestines were strung out in full length, dangling from the branches as parts of her body laid scattered, all of them connected by strands of muscles or nerves. Her organs adorned the tree like sick Christmas ornaments. I nearly threw up, but I kept my eyes open as long as I could, taking in the sight of Caroline's body. And I saw it. The shadowy figure sitting next to the base of the tree, my body rigid as the figure moved away, clearly interested in something else. My eyes now started to water from the stare because I knew if I blinked, either the thing would wander back or something worse would happen. After a few more seconds, I was forced to blink. When I opened my eyes, I saw Caroline running towards me and something large charging back towards us. Immediately, I started running through a couple of trees. I heard the heavy footfalls closing in from behind me, and I knew that it had chosen me. I willed myself forward as I heard the thunder footsteps chase after me. A loud crash spurred me forward, my lungs now on fire, but I no longer seem to need to breathe. I know they say adrenaline is a hell of a drug, but this was something more. I heard branches and dirt crunch beneath my feet as I willed myself forward, dodging falling trees and ducking under branches with speed and reaction times of a better athlete than I. Despite my increased speed, the thing was still barreling towards me. Where ducked and dodged the trees, it seemed to be plowing through them. Each crash caused by an echoing roar, which had been drowned out by the sounds of the falling oaks. I reached before the fear could settle in. I scanned around for something, and I found it. Now I can tell you, if I thought it was small, it would save me from something that just ran through 80-year-old trees like paper mache, or if I knew how big it actually was and didn't think, "You can't lift that dumbass. Run now." All I know is I turned around and I grabbed hold of the thick piece of wood and using some hidden strength or all my momentum to hoist it up, I swung it. The force of impact could have made a sonic boom sound like a whisper as the branch, which almost twice my size, collided with the thing chasing me. It looked human, but it was too large, both in width and height. Built like a literal wall of muscle, the tattered bits of what had to have been clothes hung off it. I didn't get a good look at its face as it was blocked for a split second. I saw it by the fucking log I had smashed into it. The creature's forward momentum carried it past me and into a few trees. Not thinking or caring to get a good look at it, I ran. Despite the growing stitch in my chest, I didn't slow down until I found myself back at the mouth of the forest path. "Sigh!" Mia screamed. As I looked over at her, she had somehow gotten a knife. It wasn't until a few years later I found out why she had it. Behind her hid Caroline and Carly. Carol looked a bit weary of Carly and Mia, though. "You said you'd come back if anything happened," she yelled, grabbing me and giving me that look that made you understand you were in trouble. "Well, I ran back, just went a different way," I replied, with that voice of a kid who was weaseling out of something. "Where is it?" Caroline asked, looking around as if she summoned it next to us. "Somewhere over there. I threw a stick at it and it made it trip," I replied. Feeling all of them stare, I quickly amended my story with, It was a really big stick. This seemed to be more believable to them. So it's Drew and Lily, right? They're the only ones left out there?
Sigh, no, you can't. It's...
Don't say it's too dangerous. I just proved that I can outrun whatever it is out here with us. I said, suddenly realizing how hard it was to breathe now that my adrenaline was gone. And that's when I heard it. The blood-curdling roar of something... Something much larger than what I had hit with a tree. I don't know how long it's been. After a long and frankly loud argument, Mia, Carly, Caroline, and I set off looking for the last pair of our friends. Caroline was jumping at shadows, so we always had to stop and see if they were really false alarms. Carly, at this point, was asking if we could go home as she clung to her sister. Mia had given me the knife so she could comfort her younger sister. I was on high alert. 3 years of hunting in the woods had all but told me to use my ears and nose as well as my eyes. This place had no sounds. And by that, I mean other than the noises of the four of us were making, there wasn't anything else. Not the shrimps of insects. Not the rustling of leaves from wood mice or even the wind. Not even the hoots of owls. This was why I didn't object to us sticking together. Whatever was out here had driven everything else off. We had been walking for what felt like an hour before I heard it. "Hungry yet?" the disembodied voice said in my ears. The suddenness of it made me jump, and for the briefest of second I saw it. It looked like a man, younger, barely out of high school. He stood at about maybe 5'7" and seemed relatively fit. He had that smile you usually see when someone plays the devil on TV. A smile that he made right before he shook your hand and sealed that terrible deal you just foolishly made. He had on a long black coat and a white shirt with a dark red design down his front. His eyes, though, they were the eyes of a predator. For the split second I saw him, I was filled with this primordial fear. I needed to get out. I needed to run. But I knew once I did, he would catch me. And as he faded into the wind, so did that panic feeling.
"Sigh?" Mia asked. She never missed any of my signals, did she? She fixed me with such a look, it shook me. I realized I was drooling and I had approached them with my knife slightly raised. The hunger I had been feeling and apparently suppressing was tearing at my stomach. I immediately fell to my knees as my stomach began to seize up. I don't remember too much after that, just that I was filled with a pain that just wouldn't go away. I woke a couple of minutes later. Apparently, the hunger had made me pass out, and Mia had tried everything, and it wasn't until she found some old, stale jerky that I seemed to get better. After I put it in your mouth, you just chewed it, and then... She gestured at me as if to say, "You know the rest."
"Thanks. How long was I out?" I asked, getting to my feet and wiping drool off my lips. I heard Mia reply, but I was too transfixed on how good she smelled. It wasn't like the flowery scent of perfume. It's more like when you walk into a house on Thanksgiving and they made all of your favorite dishes. The sweet and heavenly aroma filled my nostrils and it was coming from Mia. I shook my head trying to dispel this notion. Suddenly, I heard the crashing of trees and the bone-chilling scream of a small child. Immediately, I took in the direction I heard the two noises. Barely registering Mia's cries of my name,
I forced myself to move as fast as I could because I knew whose voice that was, and I couldn't let her die in this place. I couldn't see that little girl end up like Mia or Carly. I felt the stitch in my chest tear open, but like before, I didn't seem to need to breathe anymore. In only about a minute, I heard the rustling of leaves. Ready for it to jump onto me, I turned and slowed down to face the creature. But to my shock and horror, it ran past me. It didn't seem to notice me. Its eyes locked on the tiny form running only feet away from us. I tore after the behemoth of a beast and found I was actually keeping pace with it despite it charging on all fours. This time it noticed me, and almost as if it was trying to beat me to the finish line, it let out a roar that split the air and leaned forward. Realizing I still had the knife, I dived into it, planting the blade into its side and bellowed. Now focusing on the threat, it grabbed me and tossed me aside. I collided with the ground and felt the bones in my arm shatter from the impact as I slid across the ground. If I had been a split second late rolling over, it would have crushed my face. I crawled out from under it as it recoiled in pain from slamming its head onto the ground. My body was going into overdrive. I didn't even feel the pain in my arm as I charged back at it. With my good arm, I began to hit it in its face with surprisingly more effect than the blade had. The creature retaliated, and again I went flying back. This time I landed on my feet, but I felt my ankle snap. I told myself that we could go to the hospital and get all that fixed, but I needed to save Lily. The beast stared in rage at me, and before I could react, tackled me with the force of a bulldozer. I felt my shoulder turn to dust as it bit down on my collar, its razor-like fangs tearing into my soft flesh. As I was pinned, my life flashing before my eyes as the world began to fade, I did the only thing I could think of. The sensation I felt as my teeth sunk into its arms was unlike anything I have ever felt. It was euphoric. I felt my senses return as well as the tear of my muscles as I shoved the beast off of me, taking a bit of it with me in turn. The savory flavor on my tongue was like nothing you could think of. It was heaven in my mouth. From the texture of the muscle to the metallic tang of blood, I felt like I had been starving all my life up until that point, and I needed more. I charged at the creature and sunk my teeth into its neck. As it howled and tried to pull me off, I felt my teeth sink in. Like butter, my teeth sank right through its skin, clenching my jaw as tight as I could. I used my good arm to hold myself up and make myself as small as I could while the beast thrashed about. It swung a trunk at me, and with terrifying ease, I stopped it. At the time, I didn't care, but looking back on it, I realized I had stopped it with my left arm. Not caring, I chomped on the bits of flesh that I held in my mouth and wrenched it away. I continued to eat, feeling the great and horrible hunger diminished the more I did. The creature seemed to be changing. For each bite I took, it seemed to get smaller and more human-like. By the time I had my fill, I looked down and gasped in horror. Drew lay there gasping for air as a giant hole in his neck pumped out blood.
his insides laid scattered and torn all across the ground, and bits of his bones were protruding from his arms. But what chilled my blood the most was that Lily was in his stomach. It had looked like he had both swallowed her whole and compressed her into a small space. Her eyes were filled with silent terror. "Nice job," the voice came from behind. It came from the man I had seen earlier. "He wasn't half as noble as you are." He chuckled, pointing at Drew. "He gave in after he saw his previous kid sister dead and broken." I stared at him, too mortified to speak. I tried to throw up, but I didn't feel nauseous. Though I gotta say, I hadn't expected you to come out on top there. Just goes to show, it's not always the size of the dog in the fight. He said, placing a hand on my shoulder, which had somehow mended itself. I looked up at the strange man, his eyes radiating that sinister energy. "The hell is going on?" I finally spluttered. Was that a thing? Was it Drew this whole time? "Well, who else could it have been?" the man chuckled. "It was, after all, the king's test." "What? A test?" I sputtered, still trying to throw up. "Yes, that's right. All of this was just a test," the man said as he walked over to my side, watching me dry heave in an attempt to empty my stomach. "That's not going to do anything, you know. Mainly because there's nothing really to throw up," he said with a grin, his shark leg glinting in the moonlight. "But I gotta say, you were incredible. 46 times I have given this test, and not one person thought to bite the monster." "What was the test for?" I hate to say it, but 10-year-old me was just frankly curious what on earth would make him put 46 other people through what he just put me through. "Was it to see how long it took before I ate my friends?" Thinking back to the way I looked at Mia. "What? No, that's actually how you fail. No, the test was to see how good of a leader you were. How you would adapt to the unknown. You see, kid, I need a leader. Someone who can shepherd my followers. Quell them should they ever rebel against me. Someone to guide them and protect them from others as well as themselves." "And if I'm not interested?" I said, genuinely curious about his answer. "Then I wipe your memory and plop you down into the woods with all the people you kept alive." He crouched down to look me in the eyes. "But let's say you want to get all of your little friends out of here in one piece, and then let them live long and healthy lives should they choose." I looked up at him confused. "I'm not going to keep them alive or anything, but I will put them back together again, and you all can go back to playing tag or whatever it was you children were doing." I thought about it for a bit. Finally, having just simply accepted the fact that I hate a person, which seemed to take me hours at this point, or at least it felt like hours, I asked, "So if I say yes, then what happens?" "You become king. You will be stronger and faster than you ever thought you could be. You'll be able to outrun the fastest cars in the world and throw a tank like it was a tiny pebble. You'll be just short of unstoppable. All you gotta do is eat a little human meat
every blue moon. And Bob's your uncle.
My uncle's name is Shane, I corrected him. It's a figure of speech, kid, he said with half-amused, half-annoyed chuckle. You are perfectly able to mull the offer over. But I will need to keep one of them as insurance. In case you say no later. Can't have you running around saying you got one over on me.
He laughed as he held out his hand. So what do you say, kiddo? Ready to be a monster?
We came out of the forest a few minutes later. Mia had been afraid to move me from my spot. And when I started explaining what I had just gone through, she radioed everyone else, telling them to come back. When only Drew and Lily did not reappear, a search party was sent out. They were found about 45 minutes from the edge of the forest. They had apparently got turned around and couldn't figure out which way to go. I don't remember what my answer was to that man. But ever since that night, I've loved the way rare pork chops taste in my mouth.
Ugh, so gross! The taste of rare pork chops? Ooh, I can't believe he ate human flesh. I know he didn't mean to, but I feel like he took it way better than I would have. It was so gross. Anyway, that was a super messed up story, in all the best of ways. Great potential explanation for at least some of the 411 cases. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you should definitely look those up. I know I haven't been through a situation like that. At least I don't remember. But it makes me wonder if someone I've been with in the woods has. Eek. Well, you heard it too. What do you think? Was it scary enough? Or better question? Can you do better? Can you scare the laughter out of me? Now for the details. Today's writing prompt is inspired by my fever dreams. I wonder if I could really write a good one right now. Maybe if I were a little more lucid. Here it is. The floor buckled and threw her into the sticky wall. Thinking she could see someone at the end of the hallway, she squinted and made out two red eyes. Use that sentence as an inspiration or those exact words in your story. Either way, let them lead you to your nightmare. The idea is scary enough, but what you do with it is what can send it over the edge. Were they really eyes or something else? Is she at home or in a hotel or somewhere else entirely? Is there really someone taking advantage of her weakened state? Or is it all in her head? I'm dying to know. Once you are able to squeeze a story out of your brain, send it to my email for a chance to have it come to life on this podcast. If you don't know my email, just check out the website. Links to my email and social media are all on the website, as well as so much more. What's the website, you ask? That's easy. It's just the name of the podcast with a .com at the end. That's dimlightanxiety.com. Speaking of stories, let's give one final shout out to the fabulous writer you can find on Reddit under the username RedDinoRoarRoar. If you enjoyed this story and or today's episode, please give me a like, follow, subscribe, review, or anything else that's equivalent on any platform you use to listen to today's episode. Just something as simple as one of those really helps get these writers the attention they deserve.
If you're feeling really passionate about this podcast, tell your friends. Tell your friends' friends. Hell, tell a stranger, even if you're not passionate. Let them all leave laughing scared. Don't forget that the next episode will come out next month on the 13th. All right, we made it through the first story alive. Will we be as lucky for round two? Written by the terrorific author you can find on Reddit under the username Leo of Alexandria. Enjoy, if you dare.
Friday the 13th, January 2023. Every year I think they can't make glasses out of the incoming year, and every year I'm proven wrong. We will be 3 years removed from one of the most devastating, soul-crushing, life-changing events in human history. Feels like it's getting back to what it once was, and what will ever be. 7-Eleven, approximately 12 miles from destination. Ding!
The fluorescent light gives off an intimidating aura. No matter. Spirits are high. Friends are waiting. And Takis are sitting on the shelf to be destroyed. See, grab some dip too, Shell says as we split up after entering the store. Her name is Michelle, but we've all called her Shell for as long as I can remember. I put thumbs up as I walked down the aisle, hoping she'd see it. I was on a mission, and we could not waste precious time talking. We only had an hour before the party started. As my friends and I referred to Michelle as Shell, she and the rest referred to me as Z. My actual name is December. I know. You probably don't know too many Decembers, besides the month. As a child, though, I was the most active, involved in everything from dance, volleyball, ballet, chess, drama, and competitive drinking in my college years. I can remember exactly how the joke started, but I was referred to as having Zazz. I can't disagree. So my friend shortened it to Z, for short, and it stuck. My duty had been fulfilled. Takis, dip, and some more drinks. I meet Shell at about the same time, right at the counter. She had retrieved her part. Mission successful! I gave the clerk a closed-mouth smile, exchanged pleasantries, and reached into my back pocket, receiving my debit card.
Where are you ladies headed? Little girl's night out on the city?
The 7-Eleven employee spoke. The smell of stale cigarettes became even stronger when her mouth opened. Gnarly yellow teeth and those off-putting stress lines around her lips. Don't get me wrong, she seemed very nice, but a little strange. I looked at Shell briefly before returning my attention to the clerk, whose name tag said, Die. Okay. I shook my head, cleared my eyes. Diane. Okay, that was weird. I once again put that stressful closed-mouth smile on. Oh, Okay, take a deep breath, Z. We are going to a party, but no, not in the city. Yes, we're going out. Actually, only a few miles away from here. We're both so happy to see a convenience store around. Thought it was all country out here. And with that, I started to pay for our food and prepared to say goodbye forever to the 7-Eleven and Diane. As she asked me if I wanted a receipt, I started to shake my head no.
So, where are you going?
She asked, head down, looking at the receipt printer. It took me a second. Kind of rude to just pry into my personal life. Again, I looked at Shell. Her face said, I don't know. Grab your receipt or don't. Let's go. For some reason, I told her. I stumbled. We're going to a friend's house. As I was speaking, I decided it probably wasn't a good idea to say exactly where we were going. Not like she was going to follow us or anything, but why take the chance? It's just a place in the woods, miss. You actually have to go by the old mill to get there.
This lady's eyes widened slightly. I swear I could see a glossy sheen coat them, along with a slight shake.
If you're going to drive by the mill, flash your lights as many times as you can before you pass it.
Shell accidentally let out a snort and then quickly covered her mouth with both hands. I knew it was accidental when I saw her eyes. I gave her a look that said, please don't make this weird, let's just get out of here. I kindly smiled at the clerk, grabbed our purchases while Shell was still holding her face and looking dumb. I gave her a slight push, meeting her eyes with mine. Eyebrows raised as if to say, get to it. Shell understood without saying anything and grabbed one of the bags. I reached for the remaining items on the counter, but before I could, a swiney white hand grabbed my wrist. With such force, it sent pain through my arms. I let out an automatic, hey, before being pulled down toward the counter. I was shaked down with such force that my chin almost struck it. I raised my eyes, now staring directly at Diane. She lowered herself behind her side of the counter to meet my eyeline.
I'm trying to help you, the psycho said.
Get off! I tried spitting out before this apparent She-Hulk in hiding wrenched my wrist even harder.
Flash your lights when you get close. Flash your lights before you get to the mill.
And with that, she released her grip. I instinctively moved backwards, getting away from this freak while also grabbing my wrist. That really, really hurt. I looked at Shell. Who knows what the whole thing just looked like to her? Let's go. I motioned toward the door. Shell didn't say a word. As we entered our vehicle, she finally opened her mouth, laughing in a sarcastic yet realistic manner. After what I just went through, I couldn't tell if she was laughing out of nervousness or what. I could tell she was freaked out, as was I. After a few seconds, I joined her in releasing a few cathartic laughs. Holy shit, Z, I'm sorry. Are you okay? I took a moment. I looked at my wrist, red, but not broken or anything. I looked back at the 7-Eleven. I didn't see anyone behind the counter. I didn't wait to see if Psycho Barry would come back. I'm fine. Throw the stuff in the back. We only have a few minutes. Drive to the party. Approaching the old mill, approximately 4 minutes from the destination, the car arrived from our Twilight Zone appearance in the 7-Eleven has been silent. Shell mainly swiped up and down and left to right on her phone. I put SiriusXM on Channel 9 after nothing but silence. Shell almost blew my eardrums off. Z, the mill! Did we pass it yet?
First off, ow!
As I rubbed my ear sarcastically. And no, we're close though, maybe a mile. The sign said historic mill coming up about a mile. That was about a mile ago. Shell's eyes popped. Dude, start flashing the lights. Didn't you hear what Di said? I laughed, not meaning to look at my still throbbing wrist. I'm not going to take part in some country urban legend. You don't believe that, do you? I looked at Shell with that last part. She wasn't laughing. She wasn't smiling. I couldn't see 1 centimeter of white. Her lips were closed too tight.
Okay, here you go, I said. It's the star of the night. An old white building, presumably built around the early 1800s, was approaching on our right. Although it had been dark for some time. It is January, after all. The old mill was eerily visible. Maybe it was the white paint being illuminated by the moon, which was itself eerily full. I hope it's not a full moon on top of all this tonight. The mill part was a dark, evil circle pasted against the all-white ancient building.
where it used to churn, brining hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of gallons of water into the mill to help make whatever they made back then. Or perhaps it was just to create electricity. I shook my head. I realized I had kind of daydreamed in that half second upon seeing the mill. I looked at Shell. She was still waiting for an answer on flashing the lights. "Here's flashing my lights," I said. With that, I slowly extended my right arm. My left arm remained on the steering wheel. I closed my fist as I gave a sly peek to Shell, my middle finger extended. Flipping the bird immediately broke the tension. Shell snorted, buried her head in her lap, then sat back, flipping her hair behind her. She extended both arms and both middle fingers along with me.
"Oh, nice. Always showing me up. What's wrong?" Shell said.
"I was just fall."
"Shh. A truck is coming up behind us," I said quietly. Now all middle fingers were securely placed back in their holsters. "So, either let them pass or speed up," Shell said with her trademark optimism. "Have you seen any cars on the road tonight?"
"I haven't.
Just weird, that's all." I diverted my focus from the road ahead to the rearview mirror. Road ahead, rearview. Road ahead, rearview. I was hoping our destination was close, but the GPS just happened to lose signal. Not uncommon around here, but... "He's throwing his high beams on," I said. Shell looked in her side mirror to confirm.
"Oh, no, this isn't..."
She couldn't continue her statement. The truck was now within a car length, lights aggressively going from off to on, to brights to off, and back on again, and then the horn started, and I was immediately struck by some kind of Texas Chainsaw vibe for some reason. For whatever reason, I sped up. The truck kept pace. Shell was freaking out. I was freaking out. "Dude, just pull over. Let him go," she pleaded with me. Again, for some reason, I felt safer just moving forward. No doubt we missed our destination. I didn't care. Bang! "Holy shit, he hit us!" Shell screamed. "Yes, I'm aware, babe," I said, internally screaming but trying to save us from this absolute nutbag. Who knows what their intentions are? I hit the gas again, and again, the truck followed suit. The brights were flashing so fast it seemed like a human could not be capable of doing that manually. Shell started crying. I literally put the accelerator to the floor. It didn't do much. The vehicle behind us was going to rear end us again, and this time, it won't be so gentle. Except it didn't. All at once, the headlights following us became smaller and smaller. It had stopped and reversed quickly. Not knowing what the hell to make out of this, I violently pulled over. Mashing the brake with both feet, we skidded to a dangerous stop on the side of the road. I looked at Shell. Dust and dirt followed the car at our sudden stop.
Do you think this is because we didn't flash our
destination arrived? Shell and I both looked at my phone stuck to the dashboard. I looked outside. Sure enough, this was the party we had both been invited to. I think the other girls were invited too. Come to think of it, I forgot exactly who is hosting. Just wanted to get out for the night.
Well, I guess we should just go in then, yeah?
Shell said with absolutely no confidence. Look, I said. I grabbed an item from the back.
I'll admit, that was all pretty fucking weird.
but I'm not going to let that ruin this. You with me, old girl? I smiled at Shell, and it seemed to work. She smiled back. I pulled a seltzer off of one of the six-packs we grabbed and ripped the tab off the top. Clearly, sticky alcohol exploded onto both of us. When the moment cleared, we both started dying laughing. The reckless driving probably shook these up a bit, I said, and that just got us rolling again. We made our way toward the front door. Totally normal-looking house. Cars scattered about the lawn and driveway. Back to normal. Well, that was wishful thinking. The door was open. Wide open. Only a faint yellow glow came from what looked like the dining room, about 20 or so feet away. I looked at Shell. What do you think this is? Some kind of joke? I said. I kind of hear music, don't you? I stopped. For a second, putting my arm out to halt Shell, we both put our heads down, concentrating. Ring! We both jumped, now grasping each other without knowing. I'm surprised her skin is still intact. Did you hear a phone? She asked. I nodded. There was no follow-up ring, and soon we both moved. Ring! Okay, what the?
You should have just done it.
A whisper from behind us almost knocked us both on the ground in fear. Quickly turning around, we saw nothing. Okay, I've seen enough horror stories to know when to get the F out, I said. Where are all the people? There's like 20 cars outside, Shell asked. Who cares? I don't want to find out the answer. With that, I dropped the 7-Eleven bag, as did Shell.
Wait, what? Where is everyone? What's going on? Maybe this is just one of my fever dreams. The author from Reddit with the username Leo of Alexandria has a messed up imagination. Like crazy. Anyway, that's it. That's all. You can go home. Wait, hold on.
What do you mean?
It seems that the story is not quite over yet. So here you go.
I grabbed her hand and started back toward the front door, which was now shut. I don't remember either of us shutting it. Something was written on the door in red. A sickening feeling painted my entire body.
Do you see that?
Shell said with a shaky voice. I indeed saw it. Not wanting to admit it, we moved forward until the letters were readable. In big letters, spray-painted red, hopefully spray paint, was the following.
You should have just followed one rule. Happy Friday the 13th.
I declared this meeting of the Guild with Dim Light Anxiety closed. Until next month, maybe you should follow the rules, at least when it's the 13th day. Creepy real!
Damn. Who knew recording would be so rough when I'm sick? Ugh, gross.
This podcast does not condone any physical harm on yourself or others. These are fictional stories intended only for entertainment.